President Biden is banning imports of Russian oil and natural gas. He spoke at the White House this morning.
That means Russian oil will no longer be acceptable at U.S. ports, and the American people will deal another powerful blow to Putin's war machine.
As the U.S. tries to pressure Moscow, Russian troops continue their assault on Ukraine. And it turns out investigators there are already looking for evidence of Russian war crimes. Sudarshan Raghavan is a correspondent for The Washington Post, our editorial partners, and today he's in Kyiv. Sudarshan, welcome. And why are investigators already opening war crimes cases?
It's because civilian casualties are mounting, and that has really prompted accusations that Moscow is committing war crimes, largely because, you know, it's been relentlessly bombarding non-military targets in cities. One clear example of this is in the city of Kharkiv, Ukraine's second largest. And there's, you know, they've essentially hit a lot of buildings, residential areas, not just there, but also in other cities, including here in Kyiv.
You went to a town not far from Kyiv, yeah?
That's right. Just a few days ago, I went to a village roughly about 6 miles southwest of the capital, Kyiv. It was called Markelivka. And there, a suspected airstrike demolished a series of homes on a quiet street in this village. Five houses were completely destroyed, and another several more were damaged. One of the houses was of a man named Ihor Mozayev, and six people who were at his house all were killed. I met Mozayev a day after the airstrike, and he was walking through the rubble, still in a daze, looking for documents, passports, birth certificates, anything of value, as well as family photos. At one point, he spotted this little chair, a plastic chair, and it was stained with blood. And he says to me, "That's her chair. During the day, she was always sitting up in this chair. And that chair belonged to his 12-year-old disabled daughter, Masha." So, you know, as I was speaking with them, a military chaplain arrived, a Ukrainian military chaplain, along with a cameraman in tow. And he was there in part to comfort the family, say prayers, and really help them psychologically. But he also had another purpose. He was filming. He and his cameraman filming the destruction, as he said, told me, to gather evidence for a potential war crimes case against Moscow. And he had already been to five other sites around the capital since the invasion began, doing exactly that.
Wow. And do you have a sense that this conversation is also a rhetorical tool right now to get the word out to Ukrainians about what's happening to civilians, allegedly?
Yes, definitely. I mean, that does certainly help motivate Ukrainians themselves, ordinary Ukrainians, to join the war effort, to help people. At the same time, it also bolsters foreigners, too. I mean, you are seeing thousands of foreigners, certainly according to the Ukrainians, who are now arriving in the country. And part of that reason is, you know, the war is being portrayed basically the good guys versus the bad guys. And everyone, you know, certainly in the West and the U.S. sees the Russians as the bad guys and the Ukrainians the good guys. And by the fact that they know that war crimes are happening, you know, as they watch more and more civilians getting killed, it just motivates a lot more people, not just ordinary people, but also governments, Western governments, to support the Ukrainians and perhaps even send more weapons in that the Ukrainians are craving for, heavier weapons. Like, you know, everywhere I go, when I stop at checkpoints, a Ukrainian soldier or one of these territorial defense unit volunteers asks me, "You're American, tell them to send us more javelins and javelin missiles. We need a no-fly zone," things like that.
Okay, and very quickly, what about the Russian side? Is there any sense that these allegations of war crimes will deter the Russian military advances?
So far, we're not seeing any of that. I mean, they were just, you know, in the past couple of days, there have been humanitarian corridors that have been agreed upon by both the Russians and the Ukrainians. And from what we've seen, they've not honored that, you know, in, especially in the city of Mariupol in the south, where 400,000 people are essentially trapped without food or water or anything. In fact, even here in Kyiv, just on the northern part of outskirts of Kyiv, in the city of Irpin, which I visited this morning as well as yesterday, hundreds of people are fleeing the city, and yet you could hear there was shelling going on. There was shelling in the distance. There was outgoing shelling by the Ukraine army, and you could hear the incoming from the Russians as well. None of them hit the area where I was at or where the people were fleeing. But 2 days ago, it did. In fact, you know, a Russian mortar shell hit and killed four people, including a child, in the very spot where I visited yesterday near this bridge.
Sudarshan Raghavan is correspondent for The Washington Post, our editorial partners, and he's talking to us from Kyiv. Sudarshan, stay safe and thank you.
Thank you. Good to be here.